Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know. Masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 697.
Yeah?
The black smartphone.
Rotary
phone? I guess it was kind of smart.
I guess.
Technically.
In a way. The black scary phone.
Yeah. The black scary phone.
So let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And joining us once again via the magic of ZoomTube is Ryan Terry. Hey, Ryan, how's it going?
Hey, guys. I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure to get to sit down and talk about film with you guys. It's not a Thursday without your show coming through my AirPods. So I always have a lot of fun, so thanks for having me back.
Well, we're contractually obligated. This is a horror film, so we have to give you right of first refusal.
I agree with you, Tom.
Yeah.
Is it?
Well, we thought it was when we asked him.
But we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Before we get into the movie proper, shameless plugs, don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you find a podcast, you can find us. While you're there, be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. Maybe leave a review for the people that come along after you. They know what maybe we're worthwhile. And you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and also become a League of Show Sharers member. It doesn't cost you anything and just spreads the word about the show. People who were kind enough to share an episode this week: Heather Sachs, Ralph Tribble, Ella Grace, Tammy Sherman Powers, David Rojas, Lane Levanway, Ron Johnson, Julianne Jordan, Librarian Cynthia, Travis Tewitt, Chris Falls, Chris Magic Man, Nerd Adonis, Braid 1991, Invasion of the Remake, Spoiler Piece Theater, Chris Williams, Dirty Bit Podcast, L Is Not Well, The Real Pete, Ryan Terry from the Forza Crowd Podcast, circumventing the Brad Hine rule. All right.
Better watch it next week.
Just next week.
Yeah. Geek to Me Radio, Minorities Report, Binge Movies, In Session Films, Nostalgia Cast, Ronnie Castle, Chris Wilson, Feeling Film, and Matt Neglia. So thank you very much, guys, for sharing an episode. And finally, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, and you help us out, and we like you extra.
And we've just started doing the Evil Dead series. So okay. That is the first one's in the can. Kevin will be joining us at least for something. We don't know which ones he's going to be
doing. I'll check my schedule.
Matt and I are going through the Evil Dead, and we're actually going to do the show. Like, we're going to do one episode on each season. Not individual episodes.
Yeah.
But we're going to do one season for one episode.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So, anyway, there's all that. Let's dig in to the black phone.
This
is not a horror movie.
It has horror elements.
It does. And supernatural elements, which are typically associated with horror films. But I think, I know there's been mixed reactions, and I think if you make your peace with the fact that it's a thriller, not a horror movie, you'll have a different experience.
It's kind of like
film.
A darker.
I don't know, Tom. I watched it and I was like, oh, I'm going to hang up on that phone because I loved how it delivers on atmosphere and tension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think the characters are largely one-dimensional. There is no growth. And standing up to your attacker is not personal growth. That's flight or flight. That's just instinct. So there's no real and so it's like your one very weak lesson wasn't even communicated that well. And I think the great cast. I have no issues with the cast, atmosphere, tension. That all works really well. But I really kind of feel that Derrickson took a page out of the A24 book, which in my opinion means all the emphasis is on the aesthetics because we're gonna be intentionally pretentious to be able to say, oh, you just didn't get it. One of those type of films. And so we're going to aesthetically take a page out of their handbook, but like A24, fail, again, in my opinion, to follow through on a good story. See, and so that's my issue with Black Phone is it's just, and even, who is this for? It's just like, who's the audience for this?
So yeah. I think this is like a darker version of an Amblin movie. Like this reminded me a lot of like
I think the time period, but I don't think the tone felt that much like an Amblin movie.
No, but I mean, it's all kids, like, and there's the adults are barely in the movie, and the cops
even
are
the attacker.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. And the cops are kind of dumb and can't figure this out, and that's like those are the pieces of.
See, I don't think the cops are dumb.
But they're not.
I don't think cops' default position should be maybe there's something supernatural at play.
That's fair.
And what's up with the supernatural? It's just like I feel the film has this identity crisis where it's like, okay, either be supernatural or be grounded in reality. This whole trying to be both, it just doesn't work. And ultimately, comes off. It could have very easily been campy. And I think had it leaned into camp, I would have enjoyed it a lot more because there's a lot of overacting in it, and
a lot of underacting too.
You've got the cops underacting. We've got the kids overacting, and so I think when you take something that should have been camp and make it into something a bit more, and where your intent is to make it something more thoughtful and serious, then it just suffers and is relegated, to something seen and forgotten shortly thereafter.
My quibble with the film is I never understood the rules. Like, I never understood, like, how the phone worked, why it worked, why it happens to be in the home of a serial killer. Like, I wanted some sort of connective tissue as to why the supernatural element was at play. And this
it's a Tesla phone. It doesn't have to be plugged in. It gets power. So it's an Elon Musk rotary phone.
But I'm curious about that because I was kind of thinking about that as I had questions when I left, and purposely they didn't give you answers to all these questions, and I wonder, do we really need that in movies? Like, can things just be supernatural and haven't
I
they...
guess for me, at some point, it starts to just feel like a plot device. Like, oh, but the ghosts will save him. And I'm just like, well, how is that functioning? And I don't necessarily need a 40-minute, origin story of this phone. But I would like some sort of connective tissue as to, like, because the coincidences, or if you're a Latin speaker, coincidentiae, start to stack up because it's like, oh, there happens to be this phone where the dead kids can talk to him. Oh, and his sister happens to have telekinesis.
Now wait a second. So I took it as the guy who play the dad tells the sister, the daughter.
That's Jeremy Davies. He was in Lost.
Oh, he was also on Supernatural. He was on Justified.
Okay, I just always remember him as Daniel Faraday from Lost.
Oh, no.
I was trying to figure out why I recognized
him. I've never watched a single episode of that show.
It's a good show.
Is it?
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
The ending underdelivers.
Right.
But
it's a fun ride.
I watched the whole series again, though, and I think removed from it, it works a lot better because we had invested a decade of our lives, and then we're like, that's the ending?
Yeah.
But when you go back and you watch it all and you can binge and you're not waiting week to week to week to year to year, and then you're like, that's the ending, it kind of flows better altogether. It really does. I was impressed on my second watch.
Right. Except for the tattoo episode.
Well, yeah, we don't talk about How did Jack get his tattoos?
But now you know.
So, Tom, you you made a good point about questioning the rules of the film, and we don't establish them. And you know, with any well written screenplay, you can do absolutely anything and get away with anything as long as you set it up.
Right.
You can do whatever you want. It could be way out of this world if it's properly set up. We will believe it. And so we don't ever establish why these ghosts and are still contained to this room.
Right.
They can manipulate the world around him, but they can't unlock the door. They can't go upstairs.
And there's like five kids helping them. Why didn't four of those kids help the fifth kid?
So here's what I think is the dad establishes that the mom had the same power, right?
Yes.
So we know that the daughter has the power.
And I think the son
has something else, and that's why he can.
But they never really show us the son having the power.
That's true.
And so
that's fair.
I think they do. It's called the black phone, and it's talking to him. Like I
but
think that is
the
his
one and only instance. Like I would have wanted to see some sort of nod for the audience of like this kid has a version of this.
Sure,
he just doesn't know
I think, Yeah, and I think they just tell you.
And the black phone is really almost a placebo for him,
right?
To tap into it.
Yeah,
like,
that would have been
a good setup.
I don't think the black phone has any powers. That's the key.
Right.
I think it's him, and that is a dead phone off the hook, and he's just using his powers. And there's no one on that phone.
Well, but the phone must have because it still rings. Because
I think he hears it ring.
The serial killer hears it ring.
But he
says it's the static electricity that makes it ring. There's no reason to answer it. Like it doesn't actually work.
He does say that. You're
so
right.
So it's not just in his head. And I think that if they'd have made that tweak, I think this would have been a much better received film. Overall, I like the story. I like what they do. I like the payoff at the end that all of the failures end up leading to his success. I totally dug that.
Yeah.
Right.
And I enjoyed the ride. It's still like it's a moderate success for me. I'm not like this movie's amazing. I think it's one of those movies that will probably make $1.50 at the box office. People will stumble across it on streaming with zero expectations.
It's gonna blow up.
And be like, oh, that was fun.
Yeah, I think this is definitely a streaming giant. Like this, people are gonna find this again. It isn't like when you talk about the writing.
It's made its opening to like $25 million, so it's actually doing really well.
Oh, really?
$2 million.
It's a Blumhouse movie, so.
Real quick, did you notice the new title sequence for Blumhouse?
No,
I did. I liked it.
So it, you know, the old Blumhouse is like the chair in the room, and so now it's Michael Myers standing behind a tree.
Oh.
It's the people from The Purge, like as the camera's pulling out.
Oh.
Like it's the people from The Purge. It's the house from The Conjuring. Like I was like, okay.
So it's kind of like the Marvel opening.
It is kind of like the Marvel opening.
The same idea, but it's going to be all their horror properties.
Which I thought was kind of funny. Like that's their new, like, hey, we got all this cool stuff.
This is who we are.
Right, right.
Yeah.
There's the invisible woman that you can't see. It doesn't matter.
She's in the whole movie.
So a little background on the story. So this was adapted from a short story in 2004 by Joe Hill.
That is not surprising because there's about as much plot that could fill a short story. But so now we're going to stretch it to fill an hour and a half movie.
That's what I'm about to tell you. So it's 30 pages. I mean, it's a very short story.
Sure.
And it's a quick story about a kid that gets kidnapped and then he doesn't know how to get out. He's being starved by this grabber, very similar type.
Was this a spec script for Are You Afraid of the Dark? Because that's totally what that half-hour version could have been.
I couldn't tell you on that one. But, you know, it's a very similar story, but there's no sister except for a mention of her and to say that she sometimes has dreams that are really visions. And then he's visited by, he's called and I think only talks to one of the kids and then ends up getting out in a similar fashion. And so it's a really quick, just like, you're abducted. Why is there a phone ring that's unplugged? Oh, I'm one of the kids that was kidnapped earlier is talking to me, and then I'm going to take out the bad guy at the end. Like, very quick. So they had to take 30 pages and expand it into, I think, an hour and 47-minute film. So they do a lot of, they expand the daughter character, which I thought she was great. She was getting laughs throughout the entire.
When she snaps, but when she's had enough of people's crap.
Well, yeah.
There's two times when she talks to the cops.
Yeah.
That was laugh out loud. The entire theater, including myself, I thought that was hilarious the way she was talking to them. And then when she beats up the kids to defend her brother.
When she hits that kid with the brick.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that was.
Those were some good moments. So I have to say, I really did like her. She's Madeline McGraw is the actor's name. who plays Gwen, and Mason Thames, who plays Finney, who I also thought was really good. This is his first movie.
Yeah, I was looking at his stuff. I was like, I thought I had seen him before, but I
yeah, I thought he was really good. They expand on the sister character. She's just a footnote, and she's 3 years older in the short story, I believe, and they make her younger in this one. The whole stuff about getting beat up school, I mean, that is all new for this film. So that all fleshes out the character and gives him that character arc. Like Ryan says at the end, which I know didn't necessarily work for him, but I liked it. I thought it was really cool to see the kid grow and to get strength. And something about the past, like the other kids that were hurt and didn't make it out, like them influencing him, like each one had done something. I think, like Tom touched upon, each one of them set up something, you know, like with the wire or digging, and were able to help him, and he was able to get out of there and at least end it so no one else could get hurt. There was just something about that.
Yeah, I really liked the payoff of all these things that he had done that he didn't think had worked.
When
meshed together, they all, you know, the refrigerator that led nowhere ends up paying
off. The arm
off
is meant. That I liked it. That was probably the
element
that I thought was set up the best, because it was very organic. It didn't feel like a plot device. And so that's one of the times in the film, wow, that works so well, because you set it up very early on, but you didn't draw attention to the setup. You're not saying we're setting you up for something later. And so I thought that worked really well. And I really enjoyed the moment. And I liked the showdown. I don't much care for most of the setup of the movie, but I do like the showdown. I think it works very well. The pacing works well once we get into the third act. But that's the moment that I enjoyed the most from a storytelling perspective.
That was like, I was at a Friday night showing of this, and it was actually pretty much almost full, and which makes sense with that $20-25 million box office.
Yeah, because I saw it on Thursday, and we were the only people in the theater.
I saw it last night, and it was packed.
Yeah, I think, you know, Friday, Saturday for horror movies, people turn up for those.
It's also been a bit since we've had a horror movie, right?
I don't know, Ryan, what's the last horror movie? You would know.
Oh. What can
you
that regular seeing? People would have heard of.
Yeah.
That got released in theaters.
Yes.
Oh, let's see. We had Scream in January, and then we had...
That's 6 months ago at this point.
Yeah.
Well, Men, I guess, which did end up...
Another A24, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you've got
more
that.
More art house horror, not something that the teenagers are going to seek out.
Yeah.
Oh, something that teenagers
probably
are going to seek out.
Since Scream, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, for a fairly mainstream horror movie, I think it's probably Scream. So it's been 6 months.
Mm-hmm. I mean, unless you count...
Doctor Strange.
Into the horrorverse as...
I wouldn't.
Into... guess.
People
so,
got tricked into
no,
that.
No, I... It's, oh, well, okay. I'll tell you. Okay, this is... It's an art house film, but it's really great. And so I want to mention it because I want people to go out and find this film because I thought it was fantastic. Hatching. I absolutely loved Hatching. Swedish? I think it's a Swedish horror film.
It sounds like you're confessing to some sort of fetish I've never heard of. I love Hatching. Have you done that?
No, but that's the last horror film that I think it's the last one I saw, and definitely the last one that I reviewed. But no, Hatching. It's great practical effects. There's some things that don't work in the film, but you're gonna absolutely love the puppetry. That was my favorite part. But no, in terms of general audiences, I would say Scream is probably the last one.
But I mean, there's been others. I think we're thinking more like the big studio horror films.
I mean,
which Blumhouse. I mean, there's one called Dash Cam that came out. Crimes of the Future, you may be able to say, is a horror.
Oh, that's it. Crimes of the Future.
I just don't feel like there's been any like kind of wide release.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there are horror movies. We're talking about like Scream or, you know, like the big ones that are studio films.
Right.
Doesn't diminish the other one's qualities, but just what are general audiences going to turn up for and pay $30 million?
Hatching was never going to open to $25 million.
Exactly. Right.
There's no version of events where
that's true.
Where that
not
takes
that it
place.
Maybe doesn't deserve
sure,
it, but
totally.
It just doesn't have that kind of a push.
It's not the
so.
Business no. model on a
no.
movie.
I think the last one with any kind of cachet is maybe you could argue Crimes of the Future, but I think it is
that's
Scream.
Still very
so it's been 6 months.
Yeah, this is Universal Blumhouse, so putting the money behind the marketing for it. But yeah,
have they attached to each other? Like, is this kind of the new thing?
He had a deal with them. That's why he's done all these.
Do they know how many are left by chance?
I don't know. I don't know when the deal goes through, but they years back signed a deal that he would do whatever.
That's why he got the Invisible.
And Black Phone is going to be one of the houses at Halloween Horror Nights this year. Blumhouse is Black Phone and Freaky. So they're putting those together for one of the houses this upcoming HHN.
That's fun.
So Finney and his sister Gwen are they don't have the best life, right? Like, their dad initially I thought that they were going to play into, like, maybe he had some PTSD thing, because, like, on the front of the paper they're talking about how like military benefits are running out. So, like, they don't make a lot of noise around the dad.
That's the arc I didn't like. That's the one that fell flat for me. Because they have this abusive father that's awful.
Yeah.
One of his kids get kidnapped. And then basically he comes back and he's like, oh, I'm better now. I love you. Because, right. you know what
well,
I mean? Like,
that's, okay, so that's...
Well, it didn't work for me.
It was a little saying. I agree. I feel like he doesn't get a pass because... The dad, I mean. Because I feel like going forward... Right, things aren't going to change. He's happy that he found his son in that moment.
Yeah, but where was the growth that would actually cause him not to relapse?
It was a little simplistic. If they wanted us to feel like, oh, this dad has seen the value of his children.
But I don't think that he has. I think he's just happy that his son is home, and then come tomorrow, we're going right back into that same... But Finney is now a different kid, so that...
I should have seen a moment of that where the dad maybe grabs him by the scruff of the neck, like, how'd you let this happen to you? And he's like, hey.
Because this movie has a happy ending. They're showing you that the dad is now better.
Yes.
And so that was cheap to me, because we don't know why he's the way he is other than he lost his wife.
Well, I assume that he's just, I mean, we don't need to know why he's a drunk. He's a drunk. Like, that's the long or short of it.
Okay, but then we didn't see him give up alcohol or anything.
Why? That's true. We didn't
I'm,
see
I'm
any
just
of
saying
that.
There's no... If you're going to have a character act that awful, I think you need to show why they're that awful to at least justify, not that it's right, but why is he drinking so much?
Especially because they showed him acting that, right? It wasn't like, oh, dad beats me, and but it happens off camera. They showed the a severe beating.
And they never got, and there was no redemption moment. Like you said, if the kid then beats up the dad and puts him in this place, says, you're not going to do this to us anymore, then you get that moment. But we got to see him beat the crap out of his kids, and then one kid disappears, one kid shows back up, and he's nice. Well, that's not sufficient
for.
So
I guess I hear you.
Well, how is he in the short story version? I know you said
there's no. In the short story, he has a mom and a dad. I think they just recently got divorced, so the mother's not dead. But no, you just like see him for before school, and
we should also say that Joe Hill is Stephen King's son.
Oh
yeah, that's kind of a, and that does kind of have a Stephen King feel to
his stories. I like his books. I do too. Quite a few of them, and it's funny because
Nosferatu, The Tall Grass.
Yeah, he wrote a book.
He did a bunch of comics too.
He wrote a book called The Fireman, which I liked a lot. Okay. And I remember reading that book and being like, I just bought it because it was on sale on Kindle for like $2, and I was like, okay, this sounds interesting. And I'm like halfway through, and I was like, this feels like a Stephen King book, but I'm not mad at it, right? Yeah, like, I'm not like, what? This is low grade Stephen King. I feel like this reminds me of something Stephen King would have written, but it's also good. Like, I'm enjoying it. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, this dude's his kid. Oh, okay.
That makes sense.
I had no,
he wrote Lock and Key, which got picked up by Netflix.
Yep. Yeah. He's done a lot of TV adaptations now. So
he wrote a really good short story. I can't remember the name of it, but it's about this guy finds a guy who, has like this rich guy, and he's taking all these like super rich people. He has this like special entrance closet that he's discovered that basically takes them into a world like Narnia.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Does it also go to an island in which there's actually a group of scientists that are sucking the lives out of people and studying them as they age? Is this closet also go there?
It does not. It does not. But what's great is that I love the this is one of the twists, but it is that they're doing what rich people would do if they found Narnia. They're hunting the creatures. Uh-huh. Like, they're going and killing like the fawns and like all the, and so it was just like, well, that's kind of disgusting. I love it. Yeah.
So if you want to read this book, this short story is a part of a collection called 20th Century Ghosts. And I looked it up and it seems like they've now rebranded it and published it again as the Black Phone Stories to get the marketing together. Yeah. But there's like four or five stories. It's I think it was $8.99 or $9.99 on Kindle.
I think some of his dad's best work was in short story form.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's some of his best stuff is in short stories.
I liked the short story, but it just, again, it's very short. I mean, no way getting around it. And I think the film did a great job. This is Scott Derrickson and C. Robert Cargill, who is his guy from Sinister
and Doctor Strange. Yeah.
They've worked together. So they're kind of a duo. And this is reteaming Ethan Hawke with Scott Derrickson since Sinister. And I think they do a great job as a team. I mean, I think all their stuff is really, really works together with the visuals and we'll get into Ethan Hawke's performance.
So our two characters, they don't have the best life. And Finn is very timid. Timid's not the best word. He's just an awkward kid. And he's like of the age where it's okay to be awkward.
I was going
to
say, yeah. I mean, is this around the age when you grew up? In school?
Yeah, so this kid's probably about...
I would say he's 13, 14.
Yeah, so...
she's 10.
Yeah,
right?
I'm closer to her age. So this was, what, 78?
78, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so I would have been like 2 years younger than
It is
than
weird
girl.
They're talking about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is like 74.
Yeah, 78 is what it says.
So like they would be talking about Halloween. Which I just thought was like just one of those things where I was like... How is this? Okay.
Well, Halloween came out.
But
when?
This must have come out. Maybe this came out just before Halloween.
That's possible. Yeah. Halloween is Halloween 1978.
Right. So it wouldn't be out yet.
I guess that's true.
They also wouldn't have a way to see it because it's R.
That's fair.
And
that's
movies, movies play in theaters for years. And
right.
And so, 74 to 78. I guess you,
so
you
Texas
could make
Texas Chainsaw Massacre is probably just coming up on the radar of the tween
yeah,
world.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Probably still at drive-ins.
I think that's what that kid says. Like, yeah. He took me to the drive-in. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so, but no, like, I this is definitely the time frame I grew up in. I would have been 8 years old at the time this movie is set. And so, like,
I was gonna
this
say,
is totally what it looked like.
I don't think I would survive. Like,
I'm a lot tougher than you guys give me credit for.
I mean, seriously, though, that in movies, whenever you go back to this time period, kids are beating the crap out of each other, and then they just go to class with bloody lips and black eyes. Yeah. I'm like, holy crap. Things are so different today, where if you even insult someone, like, not even that much, or if you push someone, like, you are out of there.
I think
and
people
these
are...
kids are... beating the crap. Like,
yeah, in the 70s, if you got bullied, they were like, have you thought about not being weird?
Yeah.
Have you thought about punching them in the
right.
mouth?
Yeah.
And so I was thinking of you, Tom, when I was thinking, like, God, did Tom grow up in this day and age? And I have to ask, how on earth you survived that?
My daughter had a...
I got in a lot of fights when I was a kid.
Yeah.
A lot of fights.
We used to fight all the time.
Yeah.
My daughter had a run-in with another student, and I told the teacher, this has been a thing. And I was like, I told that we had to have a Zoom call with the teacher and the principal. I was like, I'm going to tell you right now, if he does it again, I've given her the green light to knock him out.
Yeah.
And the teacher was like, well, I can't. I was like, I don't care what you say.
Yeah.
Like, she's going to punch that kid in the face. And
she'll
I
be
don't
in trouble
care.
At school. She'll be a hero at home.
And to your point, Joe, I think that's very valuable. I don't want to go off on some philosophical esoteric tangent, but I think it is important to be able to stand up and defend yourself in a very physical manner, because it does build character. It can be abused and taken too far, but it also it does build strength. And I think many kids forget that they can be strong.
Okay,
and so,
Ryan,
I like that.
I appreciate everything that you're saying, but I also want you to recognize that you said in the beginning of this podcast that his growth it isn't shown in this movie.
And you just described the entire plot of the movie.
What this kid did by the end of the
being
movie.
Weak to standing up
that's
for himself.
It's instinct, though. Instinct isn't growth.
Not everybody has that instinct,
I will respectfully disagree with that, sometimes you don't have that instinct.
And even within this movie, right? I mean, we see him getting the kicked out of him, and that instinct didn't kick in there.
And
so
even
when you're about
kids,
to be murdered, that's much different.
That beating looked like he was about to get
the
murdered.
The second beating, the first one doesn't look as bad because the kid. No, the first one's not as bad. That's the second one where they beat up on the sister. And,
That was
rough.
But like I will say, like growing up in this time period, I did things when I was a kid.
Yep.
That if I was if I had done it today as a child, like I would be in some sort of special school or get an IEP or something. Like I legit once chased a kid around a classroom with a pair of scissors.
Oh,
and yeah. And because he would torment me, he just constantly like just bullied me, and it was like the teacher, we were putting the art supplies on the desk, and it was me and this kid, his name's Joey Gadisi, I still remember the sucker's name, and we're walking
Joe's
around
uncle.
And my job different. Was to put the glue on the desk, and his job was to put the scissors on the desk, and he like just kept like just mocking. I was a short kid, I mean a short adult, but finally I was like, and like second grade, I grabbed a pair of scissors and I'm like, that's it, motherfucker. and like for real, I talk like that when I was in the second grade. And I just took off after him. And then I remember them taking me to the office and like, now Tommy, what would you have done if you had caught him? I'm like, I'd have stabbed him. Like that's what I'd have done. I'm like, I'm sick of this kid.
What part don't you realize?
Yeah.
Teacher lady?
I don't even know if they called my parents. Like,
yeah,
go back to class.
Yeah.
Well, you can tell. I mean, that's why I think watching it today, some kids may think it's a little bit unbelievable because they don't understand the times. Because
it
different.
Feels over the top, like you're stacking the deck in favor of your character.
Right, but it's like, for real, and you see it in all the movies that take place in this time period, kids beat the crap out of each other, and then they just walk home.
If you see it in movies made in that time period, about that time period, that kind of stuff happens.
Yeah. Oh, I mean? sure.
So, yeah, but you gotta
My Bodyguard. Have you ever seen the movie My Bodyguard?
Is that the one that was like the
Christopher Makepeace, Adam Baldwin?
But didn't they kind of remake that with Owen Wilson?
Oh, they did. But
right?
see My Bodyguard.
Okay.
Really good.
Is that Drillbit Taylor? Is that what it's supposed to be a remake?
Yes.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, so five kids have been abducted before the grabber gets to Finney, and you see throughout the film different flashbacks, but the one that kind of opens the film is the kid is getting picked on by three bullies, and this, I would call him a friend. You know, he's like kind of a cool, tough kid at school.
He's definitely a friend. Like,
yeah.
I
mean, it's like...
They don't seem like they're super tight.
Yeah,
like, I don't think they hang out, but that kid... likes him.
Exactly. It's kind of weird because it's not like, you know, in these school movies you see the kids at the locker and their buddies and whatever. Like, this kid's cool, but he also like respects Finney. Finney helps him with his homework and studying, so they have this cool understanding. And so this kid like takes on these other he beats the crap out of a guy first.
They call like Moose or Whale or something.
I mean, Moose was being very insulting to this kid.
He dropped a couple words that are inappropriate and not okay. Yeah.
And
then
this kid let him
Robin
know.
Robin turned around and blasted him in the face.
Yeah. So when these bullies are picking on Finney.
This is one of my favorite parts of this movie. First, we should say that like Finn is like a pitcher, and there's this classic kind of 70s baseball game, and he's got the kid who's like the top kid, or, you know, I will do kind of a bit of a problem naming the Asian kid Bruce. Like, that's a little on the nose, especially when they reference Bruce Lee later.
Well, that kid would have been named that before anybody knew who Bruce Lee was.
No.
Most likely.
When did Enter the Dragon come out? Enter the Dragon's the American. I'm assuming that these...
But that's like the 70s.
I guess that's true.
And
but
this
still,
kid's like, look like he's about 14 in 77.
But still, you're as a writer, maybe don't name the kid Bruce. Yeah. But anyway, he's got him down 0-2. First thing I thought is that kid's got a batting glove on.
Or Joe Hill named him Bruce, just so you know.
Okay.
Not these writers. It's that Bruce is in the... He's the main guy in the short story.
Just out of curiosity, is he Asian? Or was it just they just happened to cast
I think
an
in
Asian?
The short story his name was Bruce Yamada or whatever.
Oh, okay.
I do think he was in the short story.
Well, then all right. But like, so he's got... First thing I noticed is the kid's got a batting glove on. And I was like, man, nobody wore batting gloves in the 70s. And then I'm sitting there in the theater. I was like, oh, 1964. All right, never mind. Take it back. But yeah, so he's fighting Robin, who is this kid's friend, is fighting Moose or whatever. And I do like in the bathroom when he scares the three bullies away from Finn. And the kid just walks in, takes some like paper towels out, and just duct tapes his hand.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's bad. Like, that's such such a simple thing, but it was freaking cool.
The kid is written very cool. And again, he was standing up for himself, which is the whole growth of Finn throughout this movie. You see this character that does it, and then he's like, oh man, I'm going to be bleeding all first
all
period
day.
Or whatever. Like, it is really matter of fact and funny. The writing in this movie, I think, C. Robert Cargill is responsible for a lot of those flourishes, yeah. those really interesting and funny flourishes. And I really like this character. But so you've got this badass character. But the point I was trying to make is that even he got killed by the grabber, right?
Right.
So
yeah.
you're saying instinct and why can't you defend yourself? They showed you purposefully even a badass kid can get killed by the grabber.
Right.
It took the help of all the kids that would go to influence him in the supernatural manner and for Finn to be able to accept what he had to do and to be able to stand up for himself. So it isn't always just enough because even badasses get killed. Even badasses get kidnapped, right?
Right.
So I think that maybe, Ryan, respectfully, maybe you're not giving enough credit to the story and what it's doing because it isn't always that simple. You know, it is just stand up for yourself. And so I liked the growth and I thought it had a really good message at the end of the day. And that moment was like, it was like the Avengers were coming through the portals in Endgame. The entire theater erupted with that callback to the mint arm.
Yeah, the
thing.
Mint arm is a
and,
good
and, I mean,
callback.
It was a badass, you know, yeah. to spoil it. And if you don't think this kid's getting out and the bad
don't
guys,
worry,
it's a movie about kidnapping a kid that's, you know,
right.
But anyway, so sorry, go on with the
yeah, so their life, you know, there you have this thing, this grabber going on in the background, and I thought the way they don't show you him initially is insanely scary. Like, yep. When you see Robin, who looks like he's walking like on the backside of like a mall, is kind of what he looks
like.
Yeah,
look like behind stores in a strip mall.
Yeah. You see the black van in the distance and you see this figure get out and it's like he's got the top hat and
it's blurred.
Right. You can kind of see like you can make things like top hat, like cape and a like a collar.
Yeah.
And
like a magician.
Exactly, like a magician. Yeah.
Which is in this is what he uses. So in the short story, they call him the Fat Man. His name's Al, but he's very overweight. He's supposed to be a John Wayne Gacy type. And so
gotcha.
He's a fat clown is how they describe him. And Derrickson didn't want to do that. Obviously, I think it kind of makes it more problematic. They didn't want, you know, it was
sure.
just very popular. They don't want to make the villain a clown. And he wanted to use Ethan Hawke, who is in good shape. So,
well, yeah, and also he's got a relationship with Ethan Hawke from Sinister.
And also that's right. just become such a trope at this point.
Yeah.
yeah.
You know, I like that they changed it. And I will say, I think this is a great mask. When you have a horror.
Multiple masks.
Right, but when you have a horror movie and you have to sell it based on the killer, like what is the scary thing that gets people? And I know we're saying it's not really a true horror movie.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that in a bad way. It's misleading to just say this is straight horror.
Yeah.
But the way they're marketing it and to get people into seats, obviously they're wanting to show up for a scary movie. And so you've got all the great horror masks and villains. And I think just from a marketing perspective, I didn't watch the trailer or anything, but when I saw a still of him in that mask,
yep.
instantly would want to see that movie. Even if we weren't reviewing it, I'm like, that is a great mask.
It's a great mask. And he changes it throughout the film. And so the changes that I think work very well are when we go from the happy face to the sad face, mm-hmm. that whether or not we've got like the top part of the mask on, that didn't do anything for me either way. But where the mask really worked is when it's the expression of the face, the smiling or the frowning, and we changed that out, and I thought that worked very well and was seriously creepy.
And with his eyes, Ethan
That's the bottom line, right? Is you get to see you get an actor as good as Ethan Hawke is, and then when you cover him up with a mask, you kind of lose the point of hiring
right.
Ethan Hawke. With this one, like
the mask is so good.
You can take the top of the mask off and you can see he can emote with his eyes. He can take the bottom of the mask off and he can it's like a detachable mask where you can
it's two parts. Interchange
the tops or the bottoms and do a different stuff.
The way that they use that incredible, I think just this is one of my favorite horror masks. I think
it's a good one.
The design of it is so good and matched with Ethan Hawke. Not only his expressive eyes and the way he acts with his facial features, but his body language, he's so creepy in the way that he moves his hands.
It's almost like each mask is a different personality.
Kind of.
Yeah.
And he's so soft-spoken, but yet so creepy in the way his portrayal is. But going back to that Robin thing when he's behind the strip mall or whatever, I almost thought he was in on it because to me it looked like he was walking towards him. Like, I was confused at first.
Yeah.
You know, he was just because looked like he was purposefully walking towards the grabber, where the grabber usually is snatching kids and tricking them into his van, and Robin's just walking to him. So, I mean, I think they clear it up pretty quickly. But in the back of my mind, the way it was filmed, even though it was eerie, I was kind of like, oh, is he doing something with...
Yeah, there was another moment in the film where I was confused, and that was when later when we see the brother, who we know, we don't know he's the brother yet, and he's just trying to solve the murder.
Which I think is great.
Yeah.
That guy was in It.
Okay.
He played the older version of the kid with like the... Who was like a hypochondriac.
It's Max is the character name.
Okay.
He was really funny.
But like... But then the camera pans down, and you see the flooring, and then they go to the kid in the basement.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I even said to my wife, and I was like, are they telling us they're in the same house, or is that just a creative scene transition?
Oh.
I honestly didn't know what they were trying to convey.
Yeah.
I thought, like, did they get cutesy, or are they telling us this kid's in the same house?
I didn't know at the time either.
Yeah.
I think that you are supposed to think they're in the same house, but it looked... from what we know in other movies, that it's like, oh, a top floor to a bottom floor.
Right.
It looked like it could have been cutesy.
Yeah.
Well, because it's, well, they're across the street from one another, so while it may not be the exact same house,
it's connected.
The house across the street is where
it's
the kids are buried.
It's where they're buried.
Yeah. The
That's
house,
empty.
The house that, that Max and Ethan Hawke and Finn are in are all... in one house on the other side of the street.
Because the cops break in and it's vacated.
Right.
So they would have a
Sign to the Lambs moment.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
So I think that, again, with the filming of this movie, it is very creepy. I think they were creative with some of those transitions that really worked. But yeah, I do like that they show you all these kids and all their strengths, and then you get to Finney, who doesn't really have that, and it's very similar in the short story to how he gets captured. And in this movie, the grabber is, he says he's a magician, and he's got black balloons in the back of his van,
right,
and shoves them in there.
Like the Goo Goo Dolls.
Like the Goo Goo Dolls.
What I like, correct me if I'm wrong, but in the trailer, at least I've seen stills. Don't you see Ethan Hawke's whole face without a mask on, just like white paint? Kind of.
So you do see that here. So it's
blurred out.
No, it's really fast. So when Finn, on Friday nights, Gwen goes to her friend's house for spend the night. Finn goes home to take care of the dad. When Finn is taken, he is walking home, and he runs into the Ethan Hawke, I don't know if they bump into each other or if like he just drops everything, and the hat goes like skidding across, and it's super fast. But you can see Ethan Hawke's face, briefly in the white makeup.
That's what I'm saying, though. So in the movie, it's so fast, and then the rest of it is from behind, and you don't see him, which I think ramps up the tension and the horror. In the trailer or whatever stills I've seen online, you see like clear shot of his face to where it seemed more. So I didn't watch the trailer. I don't know if there's more of that in the trailer.
I didn't watch the trailer.
But I'm glad they hide his face, because I think it makes it so much creepier, because you don't know exactly what you're dealing with here.
Yeah.
And I love the way that it's filmed from behind him, and it's blurry. Like
he's in shadows.
They show him in the background. It's a really good job of filming it. And so I didn't know if that was a decision afterwards to hide the face or not.
I mean... Yeah, I think once you show, the advantage this movie has is there is no quote unquote big name actor, right? And then when you show, so that to me, that gives you like an aura of realism.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you see Ethan Hawke, you're just kind of like, well, okay, now we're in, he's a movie star, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I think
so
it's
the fact that you don't see
him
until the very end, like you don't see his face and and again, at the very end, you barely see his face there, too. Like
he's all bloody and covered up.
And he's making a big, crazy face, and then you don't see it at all after that.
I think it helps because in your mind, you're like, is this guy messed up? Is he deformed? What does he look like? Like, you're just, like, guessing. What is this creepy? Who that could do all this? What does he look like?
Yeah.
And what's even scarier in the end, like with most real killers,
totally
it's
normal.
Like, they're normal. No, they look like a normal person, which is even scarier that they're your neighbor. They're your, you know, they're just...
Yeah. Finn gets taken, grabbed. Yeah. The daughter or the sister is like, you know, I agree with you. She's pretty great where she has these dreams and she's praying to Jesus. Like, come on, like, give me something.
Yeah.
And that's hilarious with her praying.
She was like, are you you know, finally when she's not, she wakes up one day and she hasn't had a dream and she was like, you mother. Like she, her mouth is hilarious.
The lines are hilarious that they wrote for her. She's so funny.
Yeah. But at the same time, Finn is in the basement and he hears the phone ringing and he picks it up. And of course there's nothing there. The next day it rings again. And it's one kid. And he's like, look, oh, they leave the door. Is that what it is? They leave the door open.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, don't go upstairs. And the kid was like, why?
I think it's Bruce first.
Is that who it is? Mm-hmm. No, it's the paper. Oh no, maybe you're right.
Paper boy.
It is, yeah,
it's a paper boy.
Yeah, because he says
starts
he's
with Bruce
with the mint arm.
Yeah,
that's right.
Oh,
because he knows him. He's like, but he goes, yeah, I know you, Bruce. I don't know. I don't remember my name.
Yeah, it's the first thing you lose. Yeah. And he's like, when you lose, what? He's like, you know.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, okay. So all of these kids that have been taken have left pieces of their plan, right? So I think
it's like an
Bruce,
escape room, basically. Each
kinda,
one solved one puzzle.
Like Bruce tells him to go to a floorboard, pull up the floorboard, and start digging, and like just start digging a hole.
And he didn't finish it before he got killed.
And I was like, well, if you flush that down the toilet, like you're just gonna clog the toilet. You can't flush dirt down a toilet. So that's step one. Step two is the paper boy, like we just said. Who said I pulled a cord off of the wall and I hit it here. So now he's got. I will
is that
say
what they did in Shawshank. Did he when he was digging the tunnel? Did he flush the dirt?
I
was thinking that's a
think
Stephen
so.
Kill. I
oh,
think that
man,
is
yeah.
a Stephen
Maybe
King.
That was a little callback.
That was
then. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I will say when he takes the carpet and starts shimmying the cord up the carpet, I was like, that wouldn't work.
There's no way. Yeah.
No.
That was. That was actually, I'm glad you mentioned because I forgot it. That was the most unbelievable thing in this movie. That wire wasn't tight enough to be stiff enough to go up the thing because when it goes up, it flops down and around. So I'm like, that wouldn't work.
Maybe the rope was excited for the sunlight. And so it was able to.
Yeah. But like and if it were a tube, like a small tube, you could direct it up it. But the carpet inside was a large opening where the cord would get bundled up in it. Like it just, the physics don't work out of how it was.
So yeah, so that's the second kid. And then the third kid, does he give like the bike lock number?
I think
yes.
so.
Yeah.
And the combination etched into the wall.
Yeah. Right. That's right. And then another kid says he's got Ethan Hawke leaves the door open on purpose to see if Finn will come walking upstairs. And the kid's like, do not go upstairs. If you don't go upstairs, you can't play the game. If you can't play the game, you can't lose or he can't win. That's what he says.
Mm-hmm.
The guy can't win the game if you don't play it.
It's like the grabber. Obviously, you're to insinuate because we don't get a backstory on him. We don't see why he acts this way. But he is really, really nice to the kids. Like we see with Finn is the only one we actually see. But then when they act bad, he calls them naughty boy. It's a game he plays. So
right.
Whatever it is, he gets off on the kids being bad and punishing them, which eventually leads to their death.
Yes.
But Finn doesn't do anything, and if he ever is almost going to do what the grabber deems naughty boy, the kids call him on the phone
say,
and say,
hey,
don't
do that.
And tell him how to get around it.
Right.
And there was something, it was really interesting watching this movie about this concept of the kids that had been hurt before by this same killer helping him. I don't know. It seems very original.
But
to
do you
me.
Think that the previous kids to Robin weren't calling him too? Like, don't
I
go
don't know
upstairs.
If Robin, well, see, that's what I said, and that's where
there's years of kids, or if not years, at least months.
They didn't.
There's
right.
at
they,
least months, if not years, of kids, and they don't talk
and
until
I think
now.
They
say that in the story, though. If you didn't catch it, they said we did call. He goes, why? He says, why didn't you call them or whatever, and they said we did. They didn't hear it.
You're the first
he's
one
the
to
only
hear
one
us.
That can hear it because of his supernatural powers that he and the sister have.
Oh my god, he's Danny.
Yeah,
he's got the
but
shine.
They do say that. They said we all called. They said we did. You're the first one to hear it. So there is that supernatural explanation happening.
It's
and
also
all the kids
but
are
then if
trying.
That's true then the grabber has it too.
Well, and so the grabber says, I haven't heard that since I was a kid. And I think that...
And in The Shining, they say, as you get older, the shine starts to go away.
So maybe there is, because he heard it when he was a kid, and that basement has that mattress, it has a bathroom in it. I think this dude was messed up when he was a kid, and I think that was maybe his room. I'm trying to write a backstory.
Right.
I don't think I need it for the story to work, but I'm thinking, like, why is this
Black
guy
Phone
messed
2.
Up? But I'm thinking, that kid was probably locked in the basement. That was his messed up, because why else would he hear that phone when he was a kid? I'm thinking, oh.
It is interesting that Scott Derrickson.
He got help.
Black
yeah.
Telegram.
Yeah.
Black Telefax.
Well, that phone's probably old enough to where that would still be the phone that was down there.
In their first... Cargill and Derrickson in their first go around is also very centered around kids. Mm-hmm. Like Sinister is a very kid centric movie where Bagul, who is also a great look, like the mm-hmm. villain is whatever, but it's a great look for a monster, is taking like children and bringing them into his little
army.
Yeah,
I was thinking about that. I'm like, that's interesting that Derrickson and Cargill wrote that first script and it's about like these kids and, mm-hmm. and there's murders and some
he takes
kids.
One kid from a family and that kid murders the entire family.
Yeah.
And then that kid be- becomes part of the
and then I'm like,
army.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm just wondering, like, what is the fascination here?
I think
the
kids
child?
Are creepy. That's what it is. Like,
well, and he said in an interview, Derrickson said, well, maybe it was Blumhouse. There was an interview with interviewing lots of them. And one of them, I think Blumhouse in this part, said a lot of horror movies use kids because they're innocent until they're influenced in a certain way. So, like, you empathize with them because they're children, but two, like, they're moldable to where you see these kids that start off so innocent and pure, and then you've got the punk bully kids, but they've been taught by their parents or abused or whatever, and you see how they've been influenced. Like, no one's bad until some other outside influence is on them, and so you also feel bad and for the kids, because it's like, well, they're just kids, like, you don't want anything to happen to them, like the good kids, like the bully kids you're not right. as, but for the other kids, like, they're the main character because you want them to get out, you want them to have a life and all that. So a lot of horror movies, you're right, Joe, they do purposefully
because
use children
they're
as
creepy
the... yeah
it's also interesting. I do want to point out Tom Savini did the special effects for this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was he's the owner of, he's got his own studio.
Okay.
And his studio did all of the stuff. So I was like seeing the promotional material and I was like, why is Tom Savini like part of these interview processes? And I was like, oh, because there are some makeup effects. Like he could have designed the mask. There's a giant,
there's an axe to the head,
which is right up Savini's alley. Like that's kind of his jam.
Okay.
But I was like, oh, cool. Good to see him still doing a little like real hands-on work.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. I was really glad they didn't make this a PG-13 movie.
It was close. I mean, like, if you take that one scene out.
Oh, no. There's lots of F-bombs.
I guess that's true.
There's some pretty graphic violence.
Yeah.
So
that's good they didn't just for the box office. Yeah. You know, they leaned into the rated R movie, which did, I think, make it more impactful.
And Blumhouse isn't, you know, he's got a bunch of PG-13, you know, Freaky and all that stuff is all PG-13
right.
stuff, which is good. Like,
they're working on a third one, he says.
I don't blame him. So. Like, those make a third Freaky movie?
Yeah, that's the one. There's two, right? Or
no?
Happy Death Day.
Happy
Death Day 3. Yeah. He's working on it.
Okay,
because that's a PG-13. Right?
Oh yeah. And that one, that first one did really well.
Yeah,
I really like the first one. Second one, whatever. But I really enjoyed the first one was a blast.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
So he's getting all these different pointers from all these different kids,
and meanwhile working on all these different escape routes, getting a wire off the wall,
pulling off the grate on the mirror, digging the hole, opening the back of that.
The back of the toilet tank, the top, are so heavy. I'm like, use that when it comes down to give you breakfast.
Yeah.
And his hands are full with a tray. Yeah. I'm not, you know, whatever. He's a kid and he's in this horrible situation. But in my mind,
also can't conceal it. So like, by the time you're coming,
that's
at
true.
Him with,
yeah,
you
right,
you
right.
Can't
you,
really.
You can't.
Well, no, I mean, if you were off to the side, he's not chained to the bed or anything. I'm just saying, if he comes and opens the door and has a tray in his hands, you just come around the corner of the door and whack him over. I mean, he'd be dead, knocked out at least.
Hopefully.
So I was just thinking, you know how heavy those lids are. He can go and get it. I'm like, weapon.
But yeah, so he
use a phone. You know,
full of dirt.
You've got a 50
or a phone full of dirt. Yeah. I don't know. Those you fill those things, pack those in with dirt. That will do some damage.
That's the whole point. That's the phone saved him, and then he literally uses it. I mean, you know, using the phone as a weapon is like a double meaning.
Yeah, we should say that like the entire time there's. The brother, Max, is like upstairs. I do like the line where, you know, he's explaining to the cops why, you know, he's got to live here. He's very like, you know, Charlie Day from Always Sunny, like pointing things out. And the cop's like, you might want to clean up before your brother. He's got like lines of coke that are just like sitting on the table.
I thought that was funny. And
that guy.
Nice.
So that guy's in Sinister 2.
Okay.
He plays like.
Oh, there's a Sinister 2.
Yeah. He played.
Don't.
Okay. Yeah. Don't.
It's not Scott Derrickson. It's not.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's. But this guy plays like the cop who is, I think he may have been in Sinister 1. I think that he was.
Are you talking about Max, the brother?
Yes, the brother. He was in Sinister 1 as a cop. He comes
back. Oh, he's the cop. He's the cop that
believes
Ethan Hawke,
them. Yes.
He's the one that he says, oh, in the books, there's always a thank you to.
Yes.
He's Deputy So-and-So.
He's Deputy So-and-So. So Deputy So-and-So comes back for Sinister 2.
I knew he looked familiar.
But he was also in It. He played the older version of Richie. Right,
James Ranson is the actor.
Yeah, but he's pieced this together, and then
he plays Eddie.
Eddie, yeah, thank you.
That's
it. Richie's the other guy. Richie is.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
That's how that works. With the
characters. Thank you. So he pieces it together, and then there's a moment where he's sitting on the couch, and he was like, "Wait a minute." And he goes downstairs.
They zoom in on the map. He's like, it can only be where these kids are kidnapped from. He's like like pinpointing where it could be.
Right.
And he zooms in, and it's like his street.
And he realizes, and he opens, he goes downstairs, and you hear like the click of the door. And at this point, I think Finn,
he's ready to attack.
Finn's got it all set
up.
He's got the hole. He's got the fridge is open. He's got the cord. He's got everything is ready to go. The phone full of dirt.
I really liked, and something else I really liked was how the sister, while all this is going on and Finn is trying to get help from all these, the kids that have been kidnapped and passed away before him, the sister is having these visions in her dream and
of bits and pieces.
And we realize that they're real and they're because of her powers, and she eventually stops having them. But you're seeing these throughout the film. And I really like how the stuff that she's seeing are what the kids are telling Finn on the phone, because we later on see it with, I think, which was a really cool scene with the pinball kid.
Yeah.
And he's in the convenience store.
He reminded me of the brother from Stranger Things.
It's very much that, which is same-ish time period and everything. But I like it that, you know, this kid messes up his pinball game, and then another kid bumps into him, and he fights him, and all these kids are fighting, and he's kicking their asses.
He cuts 7714 into the kid's arm.
Yeah, which is the address for the house. And so she's seeing all this stuff happen, and she ends up, we see the vision of like what they're doing in this spiritual flashback, and some of the lines are the same lines that he's hearing on the phone.
Right.
So I just liked the way that it kind of cut back. You saw how their powers were working in tandem. You had the sister getting the visions.
I gotta tell you, Rose the Hat should have come to this town, because good lord, they're shining all over the place.
But you like it that you like the sister has the visions, and then whether he has this certain power or she's passing it to him, like, we don't know. And I didn't necessarily need an explanation, but he's getting the same dialogue through the phone. So I just thought it was a really cool way to do that setup. Yeah.
So Max
opens
the door.
One of the kids tells him, pack the phone with dirt.
Robin says, yeah, because he gives him like little pointers on like how to dodge a punch. Yeah.
And that was a really good moment. I mean, from a dramatic standpoint, and all the kids, when he's talking to them on the phone, you see them. They're not really there, but like their spirits are
that
in
first,
the background.
I got to tell you, that first time we see a kid scared the crap out of me.
There's
like,
some
that
really,
was a good jump scare.
There's some really creepy jump scares when he's talking to them on the phone, and it's dark down in this basement. You don't see much, and like one kid's floating in the corner, which is
he's upside down with like blood pouring from his neck.
I think that first jump scare works so well, to your point, Joe. I anticipated something behind him because of how the camera was moving. However, I did anticipate it, that it was the grabber. I did not anticipate that it was
the paper boy. Yeah.
And so I like how, how it, the jump scare was still worked very well and was surprising, because I might have anticipated somebody behind him. However, I would not have anticipated the paper boy.
Right.
And that moment did cause me to jump as well.
Yeah,
there were some good ones. Yeah. And the one of the early jump scares is the grabber. He wakes up and the grabber's like there in the dark in the shadows watching him. And that's straight out of the short story where he's like, I just want to look at you or whatever. Ethan Hawke's Ethan Hawke's performance is really creepy, really good with the body language, but like he has this very soft spoken, I won't make you do anything that you won't like or whatever.
Right.
And Finn's just sitting there like, what the, like,
what'd you put in that? Salt and pepper?
Yeah, that was a funny line too. But yeah, a really good performance, creepy performance from Ethan Hawke.
Right.
Like skin crawling.
So Max like opens the door and he was just like, I knew it. Like, and of course Finn immediately knows he's not the grabber.
Yeah.
He's like, I knew something was going on down here. He's like, you got to get me out of here. He's like, all right, he's at work. Like, we're going to go. And then all of a sudden you see you see the axe smash him in the head.
Great kill.
And, you know, poor Max, who got the axe, stumbles down, and like the kid, you know, the grabber, pulls the axe, which is another good effect where you hear like the whoosh, and like out of the head.
The blood splatters all over the grabber.
Yeah, he's like, look what you made me do. And I was like, well, Finn didn't really do anything. Like,
well,
Max is the one that figured it out.
That's typical villain behavior.
Right.
Look what you made
me do.
So
he's got the dog. He brings this massive, like, mastiff. I think it's a mastiff, like, dog.
There's a dog like that in Sinister, too. I feel like it's the same.
Maybe.
I wonder if it was one of their, like,
the dog had a 3-picture deal.
Yeah, okay. Right. I was wondering if it was Derrickson's dog or he likes that type, because there's a dog in Sinister that looks very similar.
If he likes that type of dog, stop making it
a dick. So, but he chains it to like the wall so that Finn can't, and like just in front of the door, so where Finn can't get out.
Oh, and he did use the freezer.
Did.
No, it's a freezer nowhere.
Yes,
he was able to get past the dogs. He threw
a
steak. Because
the steak defrosted.
Right,
everything really does add up. Which
yeah.
I think is
that was
clever.
My favorite thing was the steak for the dog.
That was pretty good.
From the freezer.
Yeah, he's throwing them out of the freezer. You see these frozen steaks flying around the room. Like, you don't think anything of it. Yeah.
I was like, don't those things have latches on the inside? Like, don't those freezers have latches?
Not a freezer like that.
I guess 1978 probably wouldn't.
And that freezer was from the 50s.
That's fair.
That freezer was old because we had a refrigerator with that
giant, like,
with that kind of latch.
I mean, Lucy got stuck in the freezer. So she needed help to get out.
And Punky Brewster hasn't been made yet, so he doesn't know to stay out of refrigerators. But no, we had and those freezers will not die.
No,
they my
mother-in-law still has one.
My mother died in 2009, and she was still using that refrigerator.
Oh,
and we finally just gave it away on Craigslist, and
Indiana Jones dove into that one.
See, we'll save you from anything.
But yeah,
nuclear proof.
Like, honestly, like, as someone who had a refrigerator like that, like that scene in Indiana Jones that everybody likes to make fun of, I was like, I think that could work. Like, that thing was, I mean, it was metal. Like, it was solid. It was solid.
Yeah. That's fun.
Like, it was.
That makes sense then. I was like, don't they have a latch on the inside?
Yeah,
like,
but no, they didn't.
They probably wouldn't. If it's from the 50s, yeah.
Totally. I mean, that's why refrigerators and stuff were so dangerous when you threw them away back then. Like, they would always tell you, like, take the doors off when you get rid of them. And because if a kid got in one, there was no getting out. Yeah, so, but that was growing up in the 70s and 80s, they were still telling people to take the doors off. So, like, that refrigerator was clearly, like, from, or freezer was clearly,
in the
like,
60s,
from the
they
50s.
Were like, don't tell you.
Yeah.
Like, you lose a kid in the fridge, a kid in the fridge.
So, it's weeding out the weak ones.
Right.
So, I got a story I have to tell you guys, and there's probably going to be no other time that it's going to work. When I was a kid, I want to say I was about 4, maybe 5 years old. I locked myself in the refrigerator of my parents' house, and it was unfortunately at a time in which there was a serial killer in my hometown. And so at 4 or 5 years old, my parents can't find me at all because I climbed into the refrigerator to get a drink. And so I was locked in the refrigerator for hours. I don't know how many hours had gone by, but it was most of the day. And, of course, as you can imagine, just in addition to losing your child, you know there's a serial killer on who's yet to be apprehended. And so yes, that was – I don't think it was that kind of refrigerator, but kids can get stuck in refrigerators.
Yeah, because that was crazy.
Yeah. So maybe maybe that's why – many guys I go on dates with tell me I'm a frigid bitch. Because
was that a long setup to get to that line? Is that what that was?
But like there is a famous episode of Punky Brewster where
I remember
gets
that
stuck
one
in a refrigerator
for sure.
And it was a glorified public service announcement.
Yeah, I definitely remember that one.
Don't play in refrigerators, kids. Like,
oh, that'll learn you.
Yeah,
so this is a great kill though.
Oh yeah, so he gets them all set up right. So Ethan Hawke runs into the hole that he has dug.
Anytime you set up a Home Alone esque booby trap ending to taking on bad guys,
Kevin's in.
Yeah.
He trips over the wire into the hole. And once he's in the hole, the grate from the window, Ethan Hawke breaks his ankle on the grate.
So good.
And now he's got to use like the fighting technique that Robin has taught him with the dirt phone.
And I liked that. I didn't really touch on it, but I thought it was a really good dramatic moment behind him where
he figures it out.
Like, you got to do this. He's like, what's the use? Whatever. He's like, you do it for us so we didn't die for nothing. Whatever. It was really well written.
Right.
Touching moment between them where he's like, do it for me.
So he beats the bejesus out of his, Ethan Hawke. And then at the last possible second, he does like a back, not really a backflip, but he jumps, he grabs the, he wraps the cord around his arms and he jumps over the bat. Like, so Ethan Hawke
kind of got him, like he's wrestled him to the ground.
Yeah.
And he's able to get the phone cord around his neck.
And he jumps to his back. And it's a move that Robin had done earlier in the, in the movie. And he grabs and he wraps the cord around his neck and he's, pulling back on it. And we hear at this point, the phone is ringing, but obviously Finn has the receiver. I was like, this is the most 80s action,
movie
line where he's like,
it's for you. It's
which is
the last line of the short story.
Oh, is it? Okay. And he said, it's Bruce. And he says that kid's got a mint arm and he just like pulls down and snaps his neck.
This was a great kill.
And now he tosses the steak to the dog. The dog gets out of the way of the door. We should say at this time that like the sister has called the cops because she's had another dream, and she's like, he is here. And they go to this house, and of course, there's nothing in
the
house.
When they do the switch,
I was like, that was good. That was a good move.
I thought somehow he wasn't going to get saved in time or something where I'm like, oh my God, is this all for nothing? But they give you a little bit
happier. It's a good move where like the cops find the secret basement. Mm. They're walking out. And as the cops are walking out, Finn comes walking out from across the street. Mm. And it's like this massive moment where they're all happy. And I do like I agree about the dad. I think I took it as like in that moment, he is sober. But come tomorrow, he's not going to be, yeah. Right? Like, I
think in real life, that's it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's probably true.
Happens,
yes. I don't think
that's what the movie says.
I think the movie was trying to put a bow on it.
Yeah. Well, I think, to me, the bow should have been him walking into school and all the kids are like, I like the one line where you can see the one kid say, I thought he'd be taller. Like, yeah. You know,
I love it. The kids are all talking about him.
Yeah. That's,
like they're still not, some of them are like, he's cool. But then some of them are like that guy.
The three bullies are like, all right, we're just not going to mess with that kid ever again.
I liked all the chatter though. I thought it was really good.
Now he'll talk to the girl.
To the girl. Call. He says,
she's
from
St. Louis, by the way.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's pretty cool. And she says, you know, I think she calls him Finney. And he was like, call me Finn. And that's how it ends. And I was like, I took this as like a dark Amblin movie. And I hear what you're saying. But it just felt like, to me, the Amblin stuff was, and I say Amblin, but it's kind of like a blanket term for like Goonies or any of those Stand By Me.
It's
and
so
stuff.
Kid driven.
Yeah.
So kid focused.
Where the adults aren't there.
Yeah.
And kids just got to figure this shit out for themselves.
Yeah.
So I took this as like a darker version of like an Amblin movie.
I don't think that's a crazy take.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Okay.
But,
thank you.
Yeah, like I said, there are definitely some things that could have been better. Overall, I enjoyed the movie, but
I don't think
the criticisms are valid.
Changer that people are saying that it is.
Agreed.
I think it was good. It wasn't great. I enjoyed it. But
I enjoyed my hour 45 minutes. I didn't look at my watch.
Yep. So Ryan, do you like it anymore now that have we convinced you at all? Or are you still kind of...
I find so much of the film to be rather tasteless, but there's no accounting for taste now, is there? so I find many elements, and I go into a few more details in my review. Probably still about where I am, but you did highlight some elements that I did not think of, so there are more individual elements of the film that I can say that I do like a little more.
Okay, cool. Okay.
Awesome. Well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find
them. This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett and subscribe to the Games We Love podcast.
And Ryan, where can they find you and your wares?
You can find me on Twitter at RLTerry1. My shows come to a close, so there still will be four more episodes eventually that I need to edit. But no, the show... it was a great experiment in the podcast medium and was a lot of fun, but, you're going to start going in a different direction. But hey, I wrote what would be the equivalent of 20 some odd half hour episodes of TV. So that is
no mean feat.
That's my takeaway.
No, not at
from
all.
It.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. It's a fun show, and it's still out there for you to listen to, and it's not wrapped up yet. So I would say definitely check it out. Give it a listen, and I think you'll be hooked. It's really fun. And you never know. Never say never. It could always come back in some another medium or revival, so you never know.
This is true. Certainly, if it could be on TV, if you're listening and you needed something for syndication, you got to fill in some time, like 3 o'clock in the afternoon on your TV station. Sure.
Four is a crowd. Check it out. It's really fun.
And then also you can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online at facebook.com/Real Spoilers and, of course, our Patreon, patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Clifford kills Duncan.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out. It's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Thank you. Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.